This is the Last Week in English podcast, summer semester 2019, week two, with Mark Jacob here at the TU Berg Academy Freiberg. I'm joined today by, like last week we had some Americans, and today again I'm joined by an American. He's not a teacher though, he's a student here. So welcome, Sean.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Yeah, no, well, thank you. So, first question I'm going to ask you before we get to where you're from, what you're doing here, etc., is a question that I asked most of my students this week. We normally have a warm-up question or two at the beginning to get the English speaking going. And that question was, or two questions in fact, the first one was, would you like to go into space? And the second one was, is that realistic in your lifetime? So I'd be interested to hear your views on that, Sean.
Sure.
What about you?
I'd be very pleased to share them. The first question was whether or not I'd be able to, really want to go to space.
Right.
And that is an absolute yes. There are so many things that I suppose we take for granted in how we see ourselves as society. And I do know that being able to bring myself out of my environment and look back and see what we are, this tiny little blue dot out in the middle of nothingness. I think that brings a very strong perspective, and they actually have a name for this. It's called the overview effect.
Mm-hmm.
And if you speak to any personnel who have been on the International Space Station, and you ask them what they do when they're off time, they say they spend a lot of time looking out the window. They're looking at the bodies of water, the way the mm-hmm. sun reflects off of the Earth. They look at the clouds, the hurricanes. And I think that's a very powerful idea in terms of how we see ourselves
mm-hmm.
in the larger scope, in the larger picture of things. It may even be enough to bring us closer together.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I'd like to do if I was able to go to space is definitely experience microgravity.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do somersaults. I'm terrible at them. But I think I could accomplish a few if I didn't weigh anything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that would be in space. What about going to another planet? Could you imagine that?
Oh, absolutely. I've watched tons of shows. I've watched presentations about it. But it's far more difficult
mm-hmm.
than anybody except the people who are actually working on those problems are. It's an issue of atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
It's an issue of gravity. I mean, we grow and learn and exist under exactly one force of gravity. That's our acceleration. And no planet has exactly one.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually less. And that has profound effects on the human body in terms of blood pressure, mm-hmm. bone density, height, it's water content. It is a very tumultuous problem
mm-hmm.
for us as biological organisms.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention, a lot of these places don't have atmospheres or ionospheres.
Mm-hmm.
So we're always trying to keep oxygen in the right place in the right quantities, and we're trying not to irradiate ourselves with some of the harshest solar radiation that we can experience, even here on Earth. So there are just a lot of problems and not enough people working on them. But over time, those problems can probably be solved.
Mm-hmm. And how many of those problems do you think could be solved in your lifetime?
Well, we're doing a lot of good work on just leaving orbit. That is a huge energy cost to get out of
mm-hmm.
low Earth orbit.
Yeah.
There's even greater. I think it's 40% more energy required to leave the effect of gravity of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, if I take 100 joules of energy and I throw it into the air with a mass
mm-hmm.
to get it up to low Earth orbit, it's going to take me 140 to get out of the effect of gravity, where that object will not come back down to Earth.
Right.
So just yesterday, I believe, SpaceX was able to bring down three of their boosters, which are reusable and greatly reduce the cost of the ability to get things into low Earth orbit. Those are wonderful first steps. And when they're bringing out their Falcon 9s, well, they're bringing out their Falcon Heavies.
Mm-hmm.
And some other groups are making different ones that are going to compete with it. And if we can really deliver or find a delivery system to get large amounts of stuff up in space, that's going to do more now than us just sending somebody to the moon. Because
mm-hmm.
that's establishing a foothold. That's right. Economically making available the means to get out of our little sphere of gravity, which is very difficult.
Right, yeah. I mean, you mentioned economics there, and what about NASA then?
NASA will always be, like the ESA, mm-hmm. will always have a very integral part of getting things to where they need to be. They're like the grandfathers. They're still doing a lot of stuff. They're still working in their old age, and they'll continue working for a very long time. But the private industry hasn't been able to break into this market because of technological boundaries. The NASA has been able to exist because of government funding, which mm-hmm. isn't seeking profit.
Mm-hmm.
But you can thank NASA for telescopes, radio waves and radar, Velcro, and a host of other things, including cordless drills. Lithium mm-hmm. ion was very well perfected mm-hmm. as a means to be able to use a mechanized screwdriver or drill or socket outside in the vacuum of space
mm-hmm.
without a tether. I mean, right. I'm sorry, without a power source, so right. no wire. And then eventually that product made it onto the market, and they're hugely successful to this day. So everything that they spend, and I think it's like for every dollar the government spends in NASA, they get about four or five back in the private sector. So they're hugely beneficial from an economic perspective and a societal perspective. And now that the private industry is like that cordless drill, just now able to really break in and start expanding and doing the things that NASA has laid the foundation for.
Okay. Because it's one of the criticism some of my students had was, oh, why are we spending all this money going to space when we really need to be focusing on problems here on Earth? But so it's interesting you say that actually, economically, it pays space research, space exploration.
It's not well known, but mm-hmm. yes, at least my experiences with reading the history of NASA is probably one of the most technological boundaries that are being pushed that benefit society.
Yeah.
You won't find it in, say, the Corps of Engineers. You won't find it in National Park Management. You won't find it in hardly any other department. If you want to advance society, at least in the U.S., look no further than NASA in terms of the things that they produced and who has benefited from them. Even when they're working on satellites far, far away, they're using technology that is on the cutting edge of science that eventually makes it to the private market. It's like a special type of stimulus package, but it takes a long time to mature.
Right. Sounds like you have quite a background in space and all things to do with space exploration.
Yeah.
Is that a personal interest for you?
It is very much so. It's in its distilled form, it's like a mirror at which we can look ourselves.
Right.
It's we just recently took a picture of a black hole.
Yeah.
Which is,
oh yeah, I discussed this with the students, actually, the geophysics students.
It's
yeah.
one of the most amazing things I'll ever see in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I missed Halley's Comet when I was yeah. young, which was supposed to be huge and monumental
yeah.
in terms of just, you know, astronomy. But
yeah.
seeing a black hole doesn't just show us that the relativistic theory that Einstein formulated is correct, but it also shows that our ideas of space and gravity, using all these telescopes around the world, this was a huge group effort between political lines, I mean across political lines, and it's something to be celebrated worldwide, like landing on the moon.
Yeah.
And I hope to see that as time goes on, we make more of these discoveries and people give it the attention and the respect that it deserves.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and some of the students I asked, actually the maths students were also interested in the black hole and the image. And I was actually surprised, like I'm a little bit surprised when I ask you, you know all this stuff about space, and I was surprised at how many of the students were interested in space. So I think it's always good to ask them these questions, kind of off the wall questions a little bit, and you really find out a lot about people's what people are into and their backgrounds, which actually leads us on to your background. What exactly is your background? Could you tell us a bit about where you come from?
Sure. We'll start simple. Start with the U.S.
Yeah.
I was born in Virginia, which is just part. We're just outside of D.C. And I spent about 6 years there. It's quite a journey, so just hang along here for a second with me.
I'm with you. Yeah.
My dad had to move for work, so we went to Arkansas, which is in the south center part, where it's hot and humid and the mosquitoes are as big as birds. And the educational system's a little bit different down there. It's not as rigorous. I did learn a lot of things down there that I would not have learned in probably some of the places I would have been growing up in Virginia at the time. So between about 7 and 14 or 15, I spent time in different, mostly private schools. And then as I was moving to think more about college, I felt my position wasn't very good, so I went into one of these special charter or magnet schools. They're called the math and science schools. Most states have them. They're free, unlike the private schools, but all the teachers have at least a master's. And that school changed me forever. It was only the last 2 years of my education, but it was probably the most influential. And then I moved back to Virginia, because that's where my family's from, and went to college there, and graduated in 2013 with a chemistry degree. On my way, it took me 5 years because I took way too many credits. I took foods, I was doing chemistry, but I took classes in insects and society, which is one of the best classes I've ever taken. Food science, I took them in engineering. And I just liked too many things. So by the time I came out of it, it's funny. I went in with an idea of what I would be going in. And as I came out, I felt like I was in the wrong place. So I began searching, feeling around, like really what I wanted to do, talking to people, finding more resources that I wish I knew when I was younger, and made the decision that I didn't want to be stuck in a lab for the rest of my life, which is probably where I'd end up going, either working as a material scientist or as a an analyst. Then I decided to go to Southern Arkansas University, where I...
Which university?
I'm so sorry. It's Southern Arkansas University. And that's in South Arkansas. I went there because of cost. It's very inexpensive, but they just started a chemical engineering program, and I decided it's probably about time I re-enter into that system. And I went there for 2.5 years, graduated in 2016, and I'm glad I made that decision because I went on an internship at a chemical plant. That's where I met my wife, and she's brilliant. She is she got her civil engineering. Oh yeah, we're both engineers. She got her civil engineering and chemical engineering degree in 4 years. And that says a lot about her and her work ethic and discipline. So we got married. Then we worked for a while in Arkansas. We bought a house. We were ready to start a family or maybe move on to something different in terms of business. You know, move forward in life. And as we were working in our respective industries, we started talking about our career advancement. And I felt like I was deficient in mechanical engineering and manufacturing engineering. Because all of the, I was working as a quality engineer. All the things I worked in were drawings and talking about machines and processes of these different things, especially economics and the actual manufacturing process. So she was missing some things in more structural sort of design aspects. So we made the decision that we'd try to apply maybe somewhere where it wasn't expensive.
Mm-hmm.
In the US, it's the master's degrees are very expensive. So we thought, well, Germany has free master's programs taught mm-hmm. in English. Let's give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
So we applied 1 year, and we didn't finish the application process on time because work really ground us down. We just weren't able to make it work. The next year we tried, and we thought, well, we'll try applying to 5 or 6 places.
Mm-hmm.
Did that. Summer comes around, and we get like 10 notifications.
Mm-hmm.
We've been accepted to all of them. We weren't expecting this. We had 2 months to get here to Germany. That mm-hmm. means, you know, finish up our job and projects. I was renovating the house at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's ripping all of the drywall and mm-hmm. and repaint it. And just, it was tremendous amount of work.
Mm-hmm.
And do all that in 2 months and move.
Mm-hmm.
So we worked really hard those 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a complete surprise that we both got accepted to these universities. And we flew over.
And, when you flew over, did you know which university you were?
Actually, we didn't. We still had time to accept different universities. And our decision came down to proximity to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be close to her and her me. But I wanted to go to the PEESE program in Berlin,
mm-hmm.
Which is like a big multi-spectral, multi-discipline
mm-hmm.
degree. And that focused a little more electrical engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one she wanted to go to was in manufacturing engineering in Magdeburg, but we didn't like the distance.
Mm-hmm.
But she became very interested in the structural engineering degree in Dresden, and maybe more of like an accommodation. I decided mm-hmm. to come down to Freiburg. I knew that the classes would be useful in what I was going to do, so I didn't feel like I was missing out on something. Mm-hmm. And so for the first semester, I lived in Dresden with her
mm-hmm.
in an apartment and commuted back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically my background up until now.
Okay. So you came to Freiburg because that was, let's say, you and your wife got places close together, Dresden and Freiburg. So which program are you on then? You're doing a master's in...
It's mechanical and process engineering.
Okay. And it's in English.
It's in English, yes.
Yeah. And when you came here, what were your first impressions in Freiburg?
In Freiburg? Well, I had a long, long time in before I got to Freiburg.
Uh-huh.
And it was very... The most common word you'll hear is different. it was a growth experience. It was very tough for me and her at first.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really know how things worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you read about them and you try to figure them out. And sometimes the information is old. For instance, we had trouble getting internet at first because we had to wait for somebody to come and actually connect it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something I dealt with when I was a kid, but never now. Mm-hmm. I mean, now you have it in the U.S. You just plug your router in that you have and mm-hmm. you call the company and they hook it up
mm-hmm.
remotely. So being without internet for 2 weeks and trying to coordinate all these different things through the internet, I'm just very glad that Reve and a few other places have free internet.
Okay, Reve. Reve. Is that Reve? Reve. What do you mean by Reve?
Reva?
The shop?
Yeah, the shop.
Oh, yeah, Reva. Yeah.
Reva? Have I been saying it wrong for 8 months?
R-E-W-E.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, Reva.
Okay.
Sounds a bit like Raver. I mean, if you don't know Raver. Reva. Yep. Well, now you've learned something.
Now I learned podcast. Something. Like I said, every day is learning experience.
Okay, so there are quite a lot of differences. You said difference was the big word. And some difficulties. And what about with just basics like food?
So, like kudos to the baked goods.
Right.
My goodness, I've had so many different types of baked goods. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loved any of the breads that I've had so far.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about the U.S. is that its backbone is cars.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a car, you don't really have an easy time of getting around. In fact, you probably won't even have a job.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to an interview, one of the first questions they ask you is, do you have a reliable means
mm-hmm.
of transportation? If you don't, you're pretty much crossed off the list. Right. Things are so spread out that if you don't have a reliable car, you're not going to be expected to show up every day to work because something happens to it. It doesn't start. It's blow a tire. Something awful happens.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that. So having a car, it was vital.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I don't have a car. I've never not had a car except mm-hmm. when I was a kid. So a lot of things I was used to was just the freedom to make a decision. I want to go to the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go get groceries. I mm-hmm. want to, you know, anything I wanted, I got in my car
mm-hmm.
and I drove off to the shop or drove right. off to the theater or something. And it was just thoughtless.
Yeah.
Here, I have to make sure I coordinate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here I got to think, well, if I want to make it to Freiburg from Dresden, I'll have to take the 4 or the 12 or the 2,
mm-hmm.
which will connect over to the 3, the 8 or the 9 or mm-hmm. the 7, which will take me to the Hauptbahnhof, which leaves it 7:52 for the RE3, which takes me all the way to Freiburg, the yeah. fastest. But if I can, I can take the RB30,
mm-hmm.
which will get me here in 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll walk to campus, which is 30 minutes, or I'll take the you know, there's mm. so much more work involved. And you can't, when I lived in the U.S., I had a truck. So right. I could put nice. Anything in the back. I yeah. transported plants, rocks, soil, boards, you know, furniture, anything I wanted, I could just put it in the back of my truck yep. and move it. Here, I moved a washer through the transit system and I got a bunch of really funny looks. I had no way to get it from Poco to my apartment right. except for through the tram system.
Yeah.
And other people were doing that as well. If you sit outside Poco, other people are loading the tram up with things. And yep. then some bring cars.
Right.
And there's not as many cars here as I was expecting in the inner city. In yep. the U.S., the inner cities are jam-packed with cars.
Right.
It's awful. So being able to get around and move and accomplish the tasks you need to accomplish every single day or week is drastically different. And just to learn, I was just happy we got an apartment next to a grocery store. So I didn't have to take any trams.
Yeah.
But then I had to take my own bags. When we first got here, we didn't know that. So we bought all these groceries
uh-huh.
and no bags.
Right.
So we're looking for plastic bags, which is pretty common in the U.S. We're wondering why she's just putting all these things here at the end. What are we supposed to do with them? Lo and behold, we're stuck. We already paid. We're stuck with like yogurt and cereal, just the basic necessities. And so there we are coming out. We ended up in Berlin for a while before we came here. Our hands clutched full of all of our foods and necessities and trying to fiddle with our keys. It was a completely new experience. We learned very quickly to take bags with us. In fact, I don't go anywhere without my backpack anymore.
Right.
We learned very quickly to adapt.
Yeah.
But there were growing pains.
Growing pains, yeah.
We're still going through some growing pains now because it's always something new we didn't expect because the systems here are so vastly different.
Right, they're so vastly different. And you told me a little bit about everyday differences. What about at the university? You've spent a number of years at university in college in the States, and now you've been here for a while. What kind of differences are there in, I don't know, in lectures or in the way things are structured at the university?
You're right. I did spend a lot of time in the educational system. I have a lot of things that I brought with me here in terms of expectations. And most of them have been completely shattered.
Right.
I know that some classes are a little different than others. Some, I think, have homework mm-hmm. in a way, mm-hmm. where it's an assignment and you do it, you take it home and it gets graded.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't come across any of those classes yet.
Right.
I heard at least one exists.
Mm-hmm.
But most of my classes are study, exam, that's it.
Right.
It's like it ends even before it feels like it started. Not just mm-hmm. because the times are, you know, pretty much the same, but you're only going to class once or twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
In the US, if I took, say, chemistry, I'm going three times a week for 50 minutes each. Horrible, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're taking a five-hour lab that's only one credit hour. And then you have homework. And then you have... And the homework's pretty involved. I don't mm-hmm. feel... I don't feel bad for anybody who takes organic chemistry and knows what they're getting into. Because mm-hmm. the homework is a lot. It's a very rigorous course. And between the homeworks and the quizzes and the exams, which for, let's say, organic chemistry,
mm-hmm.
there's four exams and a test. So you'll have an exam on like organic chemistry 2. You'll go through like alkenes, alkynes, mm-hmm. and then you'll talk about reactions and synthesis. And maybe even touch on like spectroscopy or mm-hmm. something. And each one of those subjects has an exam, mm-hmm. quizzes in between, mm-hmm. homeworks in between those. And then at the very end, depending on how the course is structured, you may take a test and it replaces your lowest test score. You may mm-hmm. take the test and it's added to the cumulative grades. All these mm-hmm. homeworks, like homeworks were 15% of the way, mm-hmm. exams were 30. Quizzes were maybe 15, the final was like 25 or 30%.
Right.
So, and then, but some were nice and gave you options. Like if you did really good throughout the semester, mm-hmm. why make you take another exam?
Mm-hmm.
You can just opt out and take the grade that you have. Some didn't do that. Some made you do all of it. So it's a very versatile system,
mm-hmm.
but it forces you not only to spend more time on it, but to constantly engage in the process and keep your grade at a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can do really bad at the beginning and really good at the end and still not do that great.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you can start slow,
mm-hmm.
speed up in the middle, and then slow down at the end and make a great grade, or anything in between.
Mm-hmm.
So the pacing here has been the biggest difference.
Right.
Especially that I'm taking about 7 classes now, which is a pretty heavy load for a master's student.
Yeah.
But I'm only taking maybe like 7 or 8 classes a week, and some of them rotate out on even weeks.
Right.
So it's given me more free time to do the things I have to do, and then also spend the time working and focusing on longer stretches of period where I can study.
Right.
Instead of these little tiny increments throughout the week, and you learn this and mm-hmm. little thing and that little thing. You can spend an hour and a half sitting, which is a lot of time, but it's cohesive.
Right.
And when you're in the moment, you're in there and engaged, it's a cohesive learning environment is better than one, I think, in my opinion, than one that's very chopped up.
Mm. Right. And would you say that then you have to have more self-discipline here in Germany, or what? How does the different structure of the course affect you as a learner?
I would definitely agree with your statement that there is some discipline. The responsibility is more on the student to keep up.
Mm.
The difference here with the way that is you can start at any point in time. You can work really hard on a class that you've just ignored for most of the semester.
Right, yeah.
You can't do that in most colleges in the US.
Right.
You're expected to hit certain progress points. But the discipline has not been too much of a problem with me.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand where some people who have maybe a idea that they can put it off till later and not study as hard now, but maybe study harder later, may have problems here. No,
mm-hmm.
scratch that. They will have problems here.
Right.
They will definitely have problems here.
And did you have any help, let's say, or did you discuss these things with some German students or other students here? How easy was it to meet German students?
It's definitely not easy. It's strange that most of them keep to themselves in their little groups of people. Like if I walk over to the Mensa, they're usually in groups of 2, 3, 4, 5.
Mm-hmm.
And they sit together, they lunch together, they go and study alone, and then the process starts all over again.
Mm-hmm.
As a note, my program is the vast majority of them are from either India mm-hmm. or the surrounding region. And their culture is very different. It's very inclusive. It's very communal. And help is expected from your peers.
Right.
So I have been invited to a few parties. I had dinner with them two nights ago where they taught me how to make some of their dishes. I ate with my hands for the first time in my life.
Right.
Which was a very unique experience. I've never felt my food before putting it into my mouth, yeah. especially without a fork or a spoon.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things that I came here for, was different experience. I didn't think it would be Indian, but
yeah.
You know, they're a great group of people, and I'm very grateful that they have sort of shown me that side.
Yeah.
And the connection with the German students, though, is maybe partially my fault. I haven't really gone out of my way, but I'm not really day-to-day exposed to a lot of German students.
Right, because it's an international course.
It is.
You've got international students there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the vast majority of German students, I think, are taking German courses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And since it's English only, I do have a few Germans in some of my courses. I think they're somewhat isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And I have taken a step, actually, to change that.
Mm-hmm.
In that I've recently moved to Freiburg, and one of my requirements for where I was going to live put me with German students.
Okay, so you're living with German students.
I'm living with four German students.
Right. And how do you speak to them then? Do you speak to them in English in German?
It's in English. My German is not up to spec yet. It's not par. And I'll be working on that probably more heavily this semester. But my German studies my language courses won't actually start until next semester.
Okay. Yeah.
So like officially it will be next winter probably before I'm even speaking a little bit. But I'm going to try this semester. But the workload is a little bit difficult. So if I can fit time into it to learn more German, I know some, but mm-hmm. if I can learn more German, then yeah, I'll definitely get that.
Well, now you've got these German students you're living with, you can listen in.
I listen to every conversation I can.
Yeah. And how do you cope then when you're out and about shopping? I mean, is it a problem not speaking German? Or is the German that you speak enough?
There are a couple of techniques or things I do. Self-checkouts have been a godsend. I learned the one at Reva.
Mm-hmm.
And
very good.
Yeah. I can just go in and out of it. The first time we did it was terrible. but as time went on, you sort of learn some of the ways that people expect you to move through a queue or how you're supposed to approach it. Interacting with service has been difficult. It has probably been our biggest problem here because we don't speak fluent German. My wife knows much more German than I do.
Right.
But I don't think enough to... She's more reading and writing.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking is not something that she's ready to do yet. But if we get somebody on the phone, usually we can find somebody who speaks some English. And that's enough. Even just a little bit is enough. We can work with that.
Yeah.
Face-to-face with service people has been a little more difficult, like the train service. Mm-hmm. Most people speak English, and that's been very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
We're in Germany. We want to learn German. We want to speak German, and that is our intention.
Yeah.
And it takes time, though. It's vastly different than English, mm-hmm. and it is vastly different than the language my wife speaks, which is Spanish.
Oh, okay. So where is your wife from?
She's from Peru, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So she knows more German than I do, definitely. Mm-hmm. But if you compare the three, German is just so different. Now, the U.S. has a lot of German heritage. So we have a lot of words in English that happen to be German.
Yeah.
Like halt, for instance, stop, is one that we use, at least we used to use it. We have tons of German communities throughout the U.S. Actually, most of the U.S., if you look at a map, most of the U.S. was settled by Germans.
Right.
For Peru, speaks Spanish, there are also German communities down there. So Germans are a very world-known group of people.
Yeah.
And the German classes that you take in high school and college are very cram-packed. They're mm-hmm. very rigorous and very hard. They expect you to, if you're going for an A1 level, they yeah. expect you to almost get up to a B level.
Right.
For some court. It really depends on where you go.
Yeah.
If you go to a larger university, they're going to be much harder than if you go to, say, a smaller university.
Yeah.
And so one thing I'm really thankful for, though, is that Germany does make, I believe this is correct, Germany makes all of its students mm-hmm. learn at least some basic level of English.
Mm.
That has been very helpful because I can, at least out of a group of people that are strangers that I may need help or assistance from, mm-hmm. I'm able to find somebody,
yeah.
usually, that speaks at least enough English to help me out if there's a time crunch or something involved.
Yeah.
And I wish in the U.S. the language courses were pushed as much as they were here.
Right.
I know Spanish is very popular because we're next to Mexico. We're a land bridge. Mexico's a land bridge front to South America.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of physical foot traffic
yeah.
to the U.S. that are the Spanish-speaking mother tongues.
Yeah.
And that's very important language to us. Yeah. I know Spanish. Not right. just because of my wife.
Right. From school?
Yeah, just yeah. from school. I learned Spanish. It's a requirement to learn a language, but yeah. the requirements are very, very low.
Right, just the basics.
Just barely the basics.
Yeah.
And so I'm very glad that multilingual people are encouraged here.
Yeah. Yeah, I have some students who speak a number of languages. And of course, at the university here, you can do language courses, French, Spanish, Russian are the main yeah. ones, but we also have other languages you can learn here. Norwegian is quite popular, and as well as Italian. That reminds me, you were saying something about the heritage of many Americans, and I met some Americans last week, and they came from North Dakota, and their capital is Bismarck. Sounds very German.
About an Autobahn.
Yeah. I also asked them about how they communicated here, and I believe you met them. Is that correct?
Oh, did I meet them?
So, did you meet them? That sounds like you had a good time yes. with them.
Yeah. I had a wonderful time with them. They were yeah. very pleasurable people.
Yeah. So, for those of you who didn't hear the podcast last week, it was with three North Dakotan teachers who were here for a week with Global Bridges, and they came to find out more about Germany and to exchange ideas with teachers and other people here. So you met them last week?
Yeah, I spent almost a whole day with them.
Yeah. And what did you do?
Well, I was asked to go sort of be, I guess a liaison would be probably one right. you could use, and just be with them, talk to them, tell them about my experiences, my expectations, the things yeah. that I definitely wasn't prepared for.
Yeah.
And I think I accomplished that objective, but I got to sort of ride along in some of the things that I probably would not have done if I didn't go on it was last Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And the first place we went to, which I wasn't expecting, was the gymnasium library. That's what it was called.
Yeah.
And
Here they go, the gymnasium.
Gymnasium.
Yeah.
You're right.
Gymnasium. Yeah.
This high school had a library which survived a lot of troubling times, but mm-hmm. had books from the 1400s.
Right.
And these books are enough to, they're like bricks. They're huge. they're bigger than cinder blocks,
yeah.
which is the type of building block in the U.S. And these old, they're made of wood and leather, and they have chains attached to them.
Yeah.
But the information contained in them was unique, and the artistry was fascinating. And one PhD student came by. They went to Leipzig and Berlin and a few other places, but they made this stop here to look and explore the artistry behind these different annuals, or they call mirrors,
mm-hmm.
which was a town's history.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that these things have survived for so long. And ironically, the language, which I think is like Prussian or German or some mix of an older language,
mm-hmm.
Is that a lot of Germans don't know how to read it anymore. Right. It's like reading old English,
yep.
perhaps. And the content of them was specifically like annuals or like astrological features. There was one that had a very, very complex series of gears and made of paper or something. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get close enough to see it. But you could rotate it in this entire thing, this plethora of all these discs were able to rotate and predict where the sun and moon, stars, mm-hmm. and most specifically what would be considered, I guess, the zodiac predictions back then. And it was used by monks.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was used by monks in order to support certain theories of like the future.
Mm-hmm.
And which by the way, the monks were the holders of these annuals and books prior to the Reformation. And they were consequently, after the monasteries were abandoned, and these books either sat there, fortunately, like usually in somewhere that's cold and mm-hmm. sort of pseudo climate control, and so they survived, or made their way into like the hands of families or private collectors, or they were brought into these places like mm-hmm. the high school. Now the history of their collection was from a sort of collection of different monasteries where they just needed to move the books, and so it stayed there in the high school. And there were several times where something bad could have happened to them, and there were intentions to remove and get rid of the library, but it never occurred, which is very lucky. I mean, very lucky, just like not going and looking behind this door kind of lucky. Just, we'll ignore that one for now. And but the things that this library contains, it's probably well over 1,000 books. Ranging from the, like I said, the 1400s all the way until probably the at least 1800s. They have a thank you letter from Martin Luther, from somebody who donated clothes. They had, like I said, they had an atlas. They had this beautiful atlas, which I looked at it and I saw that the west coast of America had not been discovered yet. But they had mapped every single river, major river,
mm-hmm.
in the Amazon,
mm-hmm.
specifically the Amazon River, and they got all the way to the west coast, all the way to Chile
and
Peru. And I thought that was pretty fascinating that they made it all the way over to the west part of South America before they were able to get to the west part of the United States. But I understand there's a lot, there's a whole mountain range.
I mean
a wide mountain range. The Andes are very, very thin,
mm-hmm.
so I can imagine you can find some places to get through there. But I just thought that was something I was able to really bring home back to the U.S. with me when I if I go back. And but this library was a very unique catered experience, which was our first stop.
Right.
That was my first stop. So after that, they were kind enough to give us the thesis. They had copies of the thesis with pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave it to my wife because she's very interested in those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But afterwards, I think we had enough of the educational part
mm-hmm.
of history, and we decided to go to the brewery,
okay.
which is just up the road from here.
Yeah.
And this is the Freiburg Brewery, which makes Freiburger,
mm-hmm.
and they make all sorts of different beers. Their biggest one is Freiburger.
Mm-hmm.
They have another one, 1863, and some other types that are like seasonals and whatnot. But the big thing was that the brewmaster took us through the plant and explained the process. And he didn't speak wonderful English, like really, really fluent English. But he explained the process, I think, very well. And the thing was, is he was very limited in how much he wanted to talk about it. But being from a chemistry and chemical engineering background, I wanted to sort of nudge some points about the manufacturing process and the things, the materials they made the fermenter tanks out of.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the teachers were very interested in the alcohol-related side of it.
Uh-huh.
mostly like how it was packaged and,
okay. yeah.
and made and what the consumption was.
Yeah.
So they had been to restaurants. They had been to the bars, like for instance, down at the bottom of their hotel.
Mm-hmm.
But they had never experienced what I would imagine a day-to-day German sort of requirement to go get food, to go to the bank, yeah. you know, a lifestyle
yeah.
that they would need to survive. And as we're looking there at all these bottles coming up and getting sort of into a bottleneck and getting ready to be processed into the crates, I leaned over and asked one of the I think it was it wasn't Tom, it, mm-hmm. was
Eric. Yes, him, he was on the podcast last week.
Yeah, he was on the podcast last week, and I asked him, how much do you think one of those costs? And in the US we have high taxes on beer.
Mm-hmm.
And the beer typically is around, if you get glass, it's about $1.50 for sort of the lower ends.
Mm-hmm.
For a can, which is about 500 milliliters or less, it's mm-hmm. like 70 cents.
Mm-hmm.
But I asked him, and he said, it's probably about $2.50, $2. Mm-hmm. And I said, what if I told you it was 65, 69 cents?
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen the man just stop and just look at me like that before. And he said, no. I said, yeah. That bottle, he looked, pointed at it, and I said, yeah. Those bottles, a whole crate, you can get for about 12 euros.
Mm-hmm.
And he just looked at me, and all of a sudden they all started to sort of chatting at each other, and they got louder and louder, and at least the few of them who were interested were surprised. And I guess the brewmaster got a hold of it, and I asked him, would you mind explaining how much these things cost?
Mm-hmm.
And he announced it, and everybody was kind of like, oh, really? Because we've been paying, I think, a couple of euros per drink over at the bar for the same thing. And then we all went down, and we had some some sandwiches, and they had let us have as much beer as we wanted.
Yeah,
and we did.
You did. Okay. Yes, I don't know if our students have visited the brewery. I'm sure some of them.
It's
have.
Worth it. It's worth mm-hmm. every moment.
Yeah. Okay, so you got to do a few things that you wouldn't normally do in Freiburg. You've got a bit more time here in Freiburg, or how much longer do you have in Freiburg? How many more semesters?
I have the winter semester
mm-hmm.
coming up after this one. I'm on the summer semester right now.
Mm-hmm.
And after that will be the summer semester, and I'll be done with my mechanical process engineering
right.
degree. There are some other things in the pipeline now, but we'll see how they develop. I may stay here longer.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I don't have any very concrete plans of what I plan to do.
Mm-hmm.
I may go back to the U.S. I may stay here.
Mm-hmm.
All of that will depend, obviously, if I get a job or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you come to Germany and study, you have to get a student visa.
Right.
And they're only for about a year.
Oh, okay. And so you have to renew it.
Then. I do have to renew yeah. it next, it's like next February, I think.
Yeah.
And ironically, because my wife is from South America
yeah.
and I'm from the U.S., we're treated very, very differently. In terms of our ability to access countries.
Yeah.
And the U.S. passport is very, very lax. I can come here and stay for 3 months before having to get my student visa.
Right.
I could be on what would be considered a tourist visa.
Yeah.
She, on the other hand, has to go to the German embassy, either in Peru, which is Lima, very far from where she lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a 10-hour bus ride.
Right.
One way. And she was in the U.S. at the time, so we went into D.C. Mm-hmm. to the German embassy, which is even longer. It's got to take a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And she applies, gets accepted, gets stamped on her passport. They send it. They mail it back to her. Whereas I just board the plane and go. And then when she gets here, she has to do her, like, a matriculation and then her Anmeldung and then everything, which I did as well. But the process was far easier for me because I could step foot on German soil for 3 months without requiring a student visa.
Yeah.
And still attend.
Yeah.
I was attending classes before I received my visa.
Okay.
But that does require a lot of preparation.
Right.
It's not like I can just step on soil and say, hey, I want to take classes. It does not work that way.
So you could be here for the long term then?
I could very well be.
Yeah. And see what happens.
That seems to be the motto of my life. Just go, do, see what happens.
Okay. Well, Sean, it's been great talking to you.
Yes.
I found out a lot.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me here to talk about this.
And I'm glad that you're going to be here for a little longer. So hopefully we'll meet up again sometime and talk some more.
Well, as long as I'm in town.
Great. Okay. Thanks a lot, Sean.
Thank you.
Okay.